You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornRows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. You might be able to tell, I don't know if it's extremely noticeable, but I am a little bit under the weather, a little bit have a cold, whatever you want to call it, sore throat. I should be good to do this podcast, but you might hear that in my voice, so just be prepared for that. On today's episode, I'm just going to break down probably kind of two players I've seen on the Pacers that I want to kind of highlight. I'll talk a little bit about the Nets game, obviously how Fidelipo made me regret my entire Friday podcast. And then some other quick little notes. I previewed the Wizards game already on Friday's podcast. Go check that out if you want to see a Wizards preview. I might touch on it a little bit, but I won't do a full segment on the Wizards preview. But let's get to it to start with the Nets game. So the Pacers defeat the Brooklyn Nets in a closer than the final scores, put it that way, 114-106 game. It was probably a two-point game with about a minute left. The Pacers went up, I think, there's a one-point at 106-104 kind of flip where they got an offensive foul call, and the ball only hit a three, and then Kenny Atkinson threw a fit and got thrown out of the game. They made a tech, and that kind of flipped the game in the moment. So it ends up being an eight-point win for the Pacers, but it really was probably like a one-position game for most of the fourth quarter. On Friday's podcast, if you listen to it, I showed some caution and some concern about Victor Oladipo's inability to finish games since his return from injury, particularly his inability to get to the rim at the end of games and kind of close it out. He proved me wrong. That dunk was incredible. I thought that was probably kind of almost the moment where he broke through. Like, he struggled in games for the past two games, and it was close, and he made a couple long jumpers, his sweet spot, 15, 18 footer. But then he got to the rim and just threw that ball down. It's kind of like an emphatic, like, okay, I'm back to being the clutch Oladipo. I'm back to being the guy you can rely on to seal the game. Because Oladipo, I believe, had 14 fourth quarter points, I want to say, something like that. I don't have the second point, but I know he had a really good fourth quarter, which I thought that's kind of how this team can win games if going forward. So one, I think you got to take the Nets are not as bad as a team as we think they are, or at least they were in the past. So this win is actually a quality win. The Nets are 15-19. They had won seven in a row. They are a decent team. Like, they aren't the Atlanta Hawks the Pacers play next week, or even like the Bulls or Knicks level. They're a notch above. They're an eight seed contender for sure. They're well coached. They've got good passing. They've just got everything. They got a couple little good things. They don't have a great player yet, so that's kind of their issue. They don't have kind of a guy or even really a number two guy. They have a bunch of kind of number threes, fours, and fives. But I thought that the Pacers' formula to winning from now on is to let everybody else do stuff kind of throughout the first three quarters. Vic can be here and there and hit a couple shots, make sure, they don't get too far behind or they can kind of maintain a small lead. But let, Sabonis come off the bench, score 17. Give the ball to Thad to score 21. Let Turner and Bogdanović go for 15, or Turner for 15 and Bogdanović for 17. Like, let those guys do those type of stuff. And then let Vic kind of maintain the same kind of scoring level as those guys, maybe notch below. But the fourth quarter, when those guys are either tired out or who aren't just as clutch as Oladipo, let Oladipo do his thing and let him kind of become the guy again. I mean, you have to give him credit, and I know they mentioned a bunch on the broadcast of the Nets game. I mean, Chris and Ari kept saying it, but Oladipo took responsibility for their loss the past two nights. Like, he took the responsibility for them losing those games. He understood it was on him to close the games out, and he couldn't. And both the Cavs and the Raptors games, tonight he did it, and, there is some concern, though, too, when you play better defenses, and the Cavs aren't a great defense, but when you play a better defense like the Raptors, what are they going to do? Maybe you can't rely on Oladipo so much. That's what the issue last year against the Cavs, where the Cavs just cater their defense to completely stopping Oladipo. But you put Turner in that pick and roll with him, you create kind of a downhill momentum for Oladipo. He's got to still be okay with somewhat deferring end of games if he gets double teamed, triple teamed. Get the ball to Turner in the corners. He's shooting really well recently. Get the ball to Thad. You got to create a little bit off the ball action just to get other guys in. But you got to kind of, he's still the guy in the games. He's going to be the one to finish it out and close it out, and he's the one that's going to ultimately win the game. Without him hitting two or three jumpers in the last 2 minutes in a close game, they aren't going to win the game. Like, I don't know they can rely on anybody else, really. I know Collins had clutch moments and other guys. Their defense is so good that sometimes if they have a lead, they can kind of maintaining it with just really good defense. It's kind of how they sustained in that win streak where they got a couple good shots out of Turner in one game and Collison just enough, and they played really, really stout defense at the end of games. But in games where, you know, the Nets had a really good, just are a pretty, really, I think, are a pretty decent offense. I mean, they move the ball really well. They know where to exploit you in certain spots, I thought, at times. And like I said, they're very well coached, so they knew what to do. The Raptors kind of did the same thing. The Raptors did a lot of, they kind of got the Pacers defense scrambling and panicking, and they would drive in and draw the defense in, and then they kick it out. And so when you have that kind of offense where you have to maintain instead of kind of protect a lead, the defense, you know, the defense falls behind. You know, in those kind of games, you got to line Oladipo to kind of keep you up, you know, with pace. And then obviously at some point, you know, you step up defensively, make a big defensive play, big Turner block, all those kind of things. But I thought the Nets game was kind of a sort of this over-the-hump game. You know, they've struggled, and they kind of broke through. They sort of got past the struggles of the early weeks, and hopefully this kind of gave me the start of a new win streak. Their schedule, like I said, is pretty easy. They play the Wizards, Hawks, Detroit, Hawks, Chicago. The only tough game I could see in the next five is possibly Detroit. That's at home, fortunately for them. They don't play any back-to-backs, so that's helpful. And then they draw the Raptors at Toronto again on January 6th, and that's going to be a big game because it's going to be a little bit of revenge and a little bit of like, okay, are we serious or not? You know, that's the start of a, that'll be the second game of a, like a five-game road trip. But, you know, this team, remember, hasn't lost back-to-back games all year, so that's why this game, maybe they won this game. You know, they do a really good job and they lose two in a row to just fight back and win the next one. And this team, what can you say? This team never, you never knock this team for not trying. You know, they're always giving a ton of effort. Now it's, you knock them for other little execution flaws. I think Quinn Buckner said on the broadcast, which I thought was really interesting. He kind of made a really good point about that. How, like, you can never knock this team for not getting 100%. You can knock them for how they execute certain plays, how they don't, they can't close certain things, how they screw up a long rebound, whatever it is. But this team is always, you know, will be on the floor diving for balls, whatever it is. And so I thought this Nets game was a good little indicator of, like, them kind of getting over that hump, getting back to their normal ways of playing. And hopefully it'll kind of sustain them, like I said, for maybe a 5 or 6 game win streak. Then get, you know, they are really in the thick of the, I would say the race for the top, maybe not number one seed, but top 2-3 seed. They are third in the East right now. They're 3.5 games back of Toronto. I guess they're 2 back of Milwaukee for the 2 seed, so that might not be. But, you know, they beat Toronto, man, they'd only be 2.5 back. But, you know, I think they're in the thick of it in this race for one of those top 3 seeds. It's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be a tight race. But maybe Boston, I don't know why they keep kind of, they've lost 3 or no, they've fallen off a little bit more. But, you know, it's going to be a tight race for probably 1 through 5. Ultimately, I don't think Toronto is able to, like, will be able to jump that far ahead of everybody else. But maybe they will. Maybe they'll be able to maintain a 3-game lead the whole season. But, you know, it's going to come down to the Pacers beating, you know, all the bad teams and then winning some really good games against, you know, the Boston, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Toronto. You know, you're going to have to split the series with them, season series, or have some advantage. You know, they're 1-1 against Milwaukee. They're 0-1 against Toronto. They're 1-0 against Boston. They're 1-1 against Philly right now. I believe they played Philly twice this year. That's, if I'm mistaken, that's a completely brain fart on my part. Yes, right. They lost to Philly back in November. I was right. So, you know, if they really want to, you know, get a top 3 seed, let's say, which I think that's the goal, because that's how you probably win a first round series guaranteed. And then maybe you're able to, because, you know, if not, you're playing that 4-5 and you're playing one of those 5 teams. So maybe you need to get a top 3 seed to win a first round. And then if you get a top, you know, get the 2 seed, looking at home court advantage second round, which could be the path to the East Finals. But if you look at it, sort of, they're probably going to need to, like, go up 3-1 on one of those, you know, one of Boston, Philly, Toronto, or, well, probably not Toronto, because it'll probably be a little bit farther ahead, but at least a 3-1 or 2-1, depending on how many games they play, of Boston, Philly, Milwaukee, because that's going to give them the advantage to get over them for that, like, 3 seed. And that's, I think that's the ultimate goal. He said the 3 seed is the goal right now. You know, I think the season, the goal was the 4-5 matchup. Now it's the 3 seed, because the East clearly has a, I've been saying it for God knows how long on this podcast, but there's clearly a divide between the top 5 in the East and then the 6 through basically 11 and then the bottom 4. I mean, you know, from Charlotte to Detroit to Miami to Orlando to Brooklyn and Washington, they're all teams that you can play and feel like, oh, that should be an easy 5-6-game series if you're one of the top 5 teams in the East. I'm going to take a quick pause. And when I get back, we're going to talk about the two players I really want to highlight who played really well over the past, I would say, whole December. All right, welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. I really want to commend the way Thaddeus Young and Miles Turner have continued to play really over the last You know, we praised them last weekend, and they continue to kind of keep pace. So Thad didn't have a great early week. He had a 13-9 and 11-5, 13-9 against Cleveland, 11-5 against Toronto. But he had 21 points against Brooklyn, 9-16 shooting. I mean, his renaissance offensively recently has been. I mean, I've been surprised. I mean, I've been dumbfounded almost to an extent. I mean, I thought for sure the way he was kind of heading, you could see if you look at his three seasons in Indiana, you kind of see this steady little drop in points per game and offensive efficiency. You see some of the efficiency, I guess, stay up there, like shooting percentage-wise, but you see the slow drop in points per game, shots taken. His three-point percentage was garbage at the beginning of the year. But, you know, over the last nine games, essentially since that Orlando game back in early December, he's been killing it. 17.1 points per game and 8 rebounds a game, essentially, on 3 assists. I mean, on 54, 38, 72 shooting. I mean, that's those type of numbers, which I don't know if they're sustainable at 17 per game, but those type of numbers are, like, reliable number two guy offensive weapon. Like, you know, putting him on the level with Bojan level offensive, like, score for this team. I mean, he's been so good around the rim at times, it's almost, like, ridiculous that he's been able to finish around the rim. I mean, for a while, my biggest knock on Thad was he'd go to the rim, he'd get in the lane, he'd short his shot. I mean, he would have this little floater or hook shot, whatever it was, and it would end up fronting the rim or hitting the back of the rim. Like, he wouldn't have the touch, and he's finally having a little bit of touch. He's a legit threat from three now. I mean, you know, he's not taking more than, like, he's taking 2.3 per game, but he's a legit threat where if he has an open three-point shot, take it. Just take it, Thad. You're a high enough efficiency in the last nine games to keep taking it. You know, I think 38 is that sweet spot for him. If he can be between about 35 and 38 for the rest of the season, he becomes an effective three-point shooter. He helps him stretch the floor. He really is, like, he becomes a lethal offensive threat, because if you can't leave Thad open in the corner or on the side, then it leaves room for Oladipo to operate. It just creates a whole spacing, you know, helps the spacing a ton, because Turner's been such a fight in three recently. He's another player I want to talk about, but he just does so much if he can nail that three at, like, in a decent rate. Like, I'm not talking about 45% or 40%. You know, I call him kind of the Draymond Green rate. There's the cough because I told you I'm a little sick. It's the Draymond Green sweet spot, where when he was at, like, 38%, Golden State was almost unstoppable, because whole defense would cater the ball to him shooting that top of the key three, and he made it over a third of the time. It was like a super efficient shot, and it would made them. Almost, they made him impossible to beat, pretty much. I mean, they were 73-9 that year. He shot that well from three. I just think Thad's played really great recently. I mean, he's had 1, 2, 3, 4 20-point games or higher. I mean, I just didn't expect this. I did not see this coming. I mean, before this last year, he hadn't had a single 20-point game all season. I thought for sure he was heading kind of in a kind of slight downward trajectory based on his age and where he was in his career, but man, he has been so good recently that it almost makes you really think about, at some point, are they going to have to re-sign him next season? I mean, he played like this for the next 3 months, which again, you got to take with a grain of salt. It's been, you know, basically he's done this for 9 of 33 games, so a little under a third of the games. So, I mean, if he only does this for 30 games, his stats are not going to be that much better, especially considering he had a pretty bad scoring stretch in early November. But you can also go chalk this up to that he is finally finding his spot in his kind of role in the offense, where he can be a little more assertive. You know, I think in the past year he was still adjusting. I mean, you have to remember that he came first to Indiana, was a completely different team, then a brand new team the next year, and he has not been bad in either of those years, but offensively he hasn't been what I think they thought they would get when they were trading for him. You know, before he came to Indiana, he was like a 15 point a game, 14 point a game kind of guy, and really he's been 11 points, 11.8 last year, and 11.9 so far this year, and I think he's finally finding his spot with this team. He kind of knows where he fits. You know, he knows where to be in spots for Oladipo passes or for Darren Collison passes. He knows how to, he just knows how to be in the right spots, and guys are finding him in those spots a lot more than they did in the past. You know, instead of, you know, the twice a game pass to Thad off the cutting baseline to the rim, he's getting that maybe two or, you know, maybe got up one or two games before, now he's getting two or three times. That little bit of efficiency has helped increase his offensive efficiency and so on. And he's been really good, like I said, at putting the ball on the floor and kind of getting himself into the rim. And obviously he's sort of the heart of their defense in terms of just, like, he guards the other team's best player most nights, and he puts up a really good effort, and he's just a high energy defender, and he can play 38 minutes sometimes if he needs to. Also really helpful. And I've just been so impressed with him for 9 games now, and I just thought you got to keep talking about Thad because he's probably the least likely Pacer to say he's playing well, and you know he doesn't get a lot of credit. He gets kind of the he's the silent, steady hand of this team, and he just deserves a ton of credit for the way he's played over the past 9 games, and really was a huge part of over that 9-game stretch them being 7-2. Without the way he's played, this team is definitely not 7-2 over those 9 games. And the last player I wanted to talk about, and you know it's going to shock people because I've been called both a Miles hater and a Miles. I've really never been called a Miles apologist, but just watching some of the film I was kind of just doing this morning, watching a little bit of the highlights and kind of just trying to, you know, rewatch some of the past, you know, 4 or 5 games, just kind of get a grasp on the Pacers and where they're kind of playing. Basically, I wanted to see kind of the differences between their losses and their wins. But in each of those games, you can just kind of tell Turner is just like a presence. And it is defensively more than anything. He's just a presence. I mean, he's putting up over basically a 14-game stretch since his injury. He got back from that. He missed the Spurs game with that, I think, with ankle injury. He's averaging 3.3 blocks per game. But you can just see the impact he makes defensively at times. I mean, he has been so good at, I think, because he's gotten better shape and agility, whatever it was with yoga and all that stuff, you can see that he's able to kind of stick on the defender just a tiny bit longer so that the guy going to the rim physically can get to the rim and he's able to make that recovery and get over and just send the ball away from the rim half the time. But, like, he's able to do it in a much smoother motion. You know, instead of it before, it was kind of like he was almost just standing on the rim ready for the guy to come to him. He's almost surprising guys with his blocks at times. You know, he's making a lot of those pinned backboard blocks that the guys don't see coming. And he's really done a good job of hitting. When he gets switched, he's fine. I mean, he gets beat sometimes because he's just a 7-foot dude playing. If he has a guard, a point guard, or a guard, but he can hold his own. And the guy's trying to press him up. He keeps his feet. Doesn't bite. You know, if he doesn't get beat to the rim because he has his length to recover on the back end. Like, he's just been such a good defender, and you can feel his presence defensively because that's been the difference. You know, early on in the year, it felt like, you know, Sabonis' offense was so fantastic that you know his defensive drop from Turner you couldn't feel as much. Because he was such an effective offensive player. But recently, you've kind of felt that Turner's, like, taking the next notch defensively. And you can kind of tell when Sabonis on the court and Turner's not. Because you can tell the team is just not as good at defending. The rim is not a good defensive team when he's not on the floor. And when you put that line together, too, with, like, a Kojo, Thad, Oladipo, you can throw Bogdan in there. And you put Turner out there. I mean, that's just such a lethal defensive team. And it's kind of like you can almost close games with that without needing to score a point at times. I mean, that's how good they are defensively. And he just made his presence so known. Points-wise, you know, it's been up and down. A lot of it really depends on his shots. You know, his shooting percentage has not been really, you know, in that 14 years has not been garbage. He had one game where he shot 33%. Besides that, it's a bunch of 40s, 50s. You know, he had, again, against Milwaukee where he had 23 points where he's not at 22. But, like, him taking those shots were all really in rhythm. But mainly he's shooting 53%, basically, or 52.5%, sorry, or 0.4, so I don't round up because that's, we don't round up from 4 to 3. 52.5% over this stretch with a 48% from 3. This is a 14-game stretch since his came back from injury. He's been efficient, too. Like, he took 6 shots the other night against Toronto, but he made 3 of 6. Like, it wasn't like he was, you know, was 3 of 10. So even when he's not scoring a ton of points, which 10 is not a ton, which I think, you know, I think the sweet spot for him, again, is like 13 to 15, maybe even like 15 to 18 is that kind of when he's, you know, that scoring that amount of points, he's really kind of really good. But even when he's doing that many points, he's not like a complete negative because he's becoming a threat from three, so he stretches the floor, and he's not just missing shots left and right. You know, I think the way he's shooting from three now is going to make, you know, you're going to start to see this adjustment and from both defenses when they guard the Pacers and the Pacers. So in these close games, which they played now, basically 3 of them, you know, I thought the biggest knock on Oladipo was he drove and he got double teamed and he had Turner in the corner on that one play where he got the ball stolen from him. Or it was a jump ball, I think. You know, on that play, I was like, you know what? Oladipo, just give it to Turner. I mean, if Turner misses the game-winning three, misses it. You know, it's what it is, or game-tying three, whatever it would have been. But just give him the ball. I mean, Oladipo has to just kind of realize that his guys are playing really well right now. His other teammates are playing fantastic. And he does realize that a little bit. But at the end of games, he's got to start to realize it, too, and be like, listen, they're going to triple-team me. I got to get the ball out. And worst case that they could do is get out the Turner and start kicking it around and maybe get Oladipo back open on another side on a kick-around. But, you know, they just have to be – They have to really start using Turner. That's kind of the next step, is using him at the end of games offensively because he's been so efficient. I mean, like, his three-point percentage, you know, he's been so efficient that you got to kind of use him more. And then, like, one other thing on Turner really has been he's had more fight with him, like, the last 14 games. He's really fighting for rebounds. You see a lot of these, he's getting a lot of second chance shots on shots he misses. Like, he's really kind of figuring out how to use his body and his length to get past a lot of dudes. Because, you know, I think for a while, the biggest knock on Turner was like, you're a 7-foot dude with a wingspan for God knows how long, and why are you getting boxed out by, you know, 6'8 dudes left and right? But now he's really like, oh, I can get over that dude without causing a foul. I can, like, push, tip it in, or I can tip it back to myself, or I can, I've got, like, my agility now allows me to get kind of around you quicker. I can kind of, you know, sidestep you and get the rebound and stuff like that. And he's been really good about that. And so, I don't know, I think he's just been fantastic over this last, this is really going to come back from injury. Just, I would say, this December so far has been the best month of his career. I mean, if you just isolate his December stats out a little bit, I mean, I'm sure they're, so you go from December 1st to now, you isolate those 11 games out, it's 15.4 points, 9.8 rebounds on a 51, 48, 63% shooting. He's a plus minus on the court of 7.5. I mean, he's been fantastic. And, you know, it was such a bad two games against Toronto and Cleveland that you kind of, like, forget that this team is really in the midst of, like, winning 8 of their last 10. I mean, if I go back before then, they're in the midst of, like, an incredible, I think, 20-game run if I looked at it right. So if you really go back over their last, like, 20 games, so you see, they've won 8 of their last 10, and they've won basically 13 of their last 20, or 14 of their last 20. I mean, they've been an incredible run, really, since that loss to Houston. They had a little bit of a bad stretch on those two games that Oladipo missed against Charlotte and San Antonio, but then they had obviously that you know, annoying end of West Coast kind of swing. And they aren't as, you know, I think the record this year, I have to look it up at some point, I'll probably write about this eventually, they aren't quite as good in the clutch as they were last season. I mean, last season they were incredible, but they're still good enough in the clutch now. But they're winning games by a lot more. I mean, they're beating teams. They're not just, like, hanging around, only but closing. They're just beating teams. I mean, they, you know, they beat up on, really, they beat up on Philadelphia. They beat up Milwaukee. Like, they're beating those teams. They're good teams they just beat up on. And Toronto, if they didn't, you know, if they had a good fourth quarter, they would have beat them by 10 or 15. So, you know, they're really, I would say, one bad quarter in a, I'd say five bad quarters of basketball, maybe six, you can include two against Toronto, but they played really bad against Cleveland. I said all game. It was kind of a game I think they had probably looked over, were looking towards Toronto, and they played probably a bad second half against Toronto, and that was it. And that was really it. And this whole 10-game stretch, they played maybe six terrible quarters of basketball, which is incredible. I mean, that's how you build a team that can compete for a number one seed. I mean, you know it might seem kind of far-fetched, and I keep saying it, but they're only 3.5 out of the one seed. Yes, it's going to be hard. They're going to have to go on another little run, probably win 8 or 9 more games in a row at some point, or 8 of 10 again, like they're doing now. But, man, if they can get up, I mean, they can make it close for sure. I mean, Toronto's a really good team. They've been really good this year, and they're really deep. But if they can make it close, and they can avoid another Oladipo injury or something like that, and they can get really, you know, make it close to the end of the season, they have a legit shot at vying for that 1, 2, or 3 seed. That's all I've got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at From Madden 5, my co-host Tony East at T East NBA. Send us comments, questions, concerns. I think I want to do a mailbag podcast once the new year starts. So if you have any questions, just start tweeting at our Locked On Pacers account. We'd love to compile those up, because I would love to do a mailbag at some point. You know, I think the last time we did was maybe before Thanksgiving. So maybe it's time to do a mailbag for the New Year's, or before the New Year's. So, as always, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get this podcast. You can check out the other Locked On podcasts by searching Locked On and whatever team you want to search. We've got college football. We've got NFL. We've got other NBA. The Locked On NBA show is a good NBA show to kind of listen to. Lots of good national NBA news on that one. You know, we don't have Locked On Colts yet, but if you're other football fans, click, you know, you can go to other. I don't know. I mean, if you're in the Indiana area, maybe you're a Bengals fan, which they haven't been great this year, so maybe not a great place to listen to, but there's a Locked On Bears, so, you know, check that out. There's a Locked On MLB show that might be interesting to listen to. I don't know if there's a Locked On Reds yet, but that could be a good podcast to listen to on the Reds. But yeah, just check out all other Locked On podcasts, because there's a bunch of them, and, you know, it's good to support the network. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.